All right, so as you can see, we're in Proverbs chapter 18 and down to question 24. And I think we'd started talking about it, hadn't we? No? Okay. So.
No, I stalled and did one more illustration for 23.
You just ran us right out of time. Huh? All right, so in question 24, then the author of this particular lesson says, what is folly and shame? So when we look at verse 13, what then is the answer to that?
He that answers a matter before he hears it.
Before he hears a matter, yeah. So that's something that I guess we see rather frequently, people that are giving an answer before they know the matter. It's interesting I almost brought up the commentary just to read what the commentator says on this particular verse, because it all has to do with people talking and interrupting one another. And really, that's what this is, giving an answer before you hear. so many times that people will be discussing with one another, and the person that's being spoken at decides that he or she's got something to say, and they just interrupt. That's not proper. we always, of course, in classes at work and everything, we're always taught to listen until the person is done, and then make any response that you have, and to not listen with the idea that you're countering every point that person is making throughout the way, but rather, because that means that you're not listening to what he or she has to say. So we listen to hear what the person has to say, and when that person is done, then we start. And I think that's a lot of what is talked about here in verse 13. Folly and shame to that person who gives an answer before he hears. we have a number of verses that we can look at that discuss about that somewhat. And, of course, I'm using the verses that Randy gave me.
I have one.
You do?
Yeah. John 7:51.
John 7:51. What if I already have that?
If you already have it, then I'll wait to you.
I do already have it.
You do?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like with Wayne on Wednesday nights, who loves to jump to the end of the discussion before we even get to it. Let me
unburden myself here first.
All right. So let's look at some parallel passages or some examples of the things that have to do with this particular discussion that's being made here in chapter 18. And for that, we can just go back to chapter 15 and verse 28. And here we have the positive part, at least at the beginning. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. So we see that the person that's righteous, he thinks about how he should answer these things, not just, well, interrupting or jumping in or speaking before all has been told. And we'll get to that later. Talks about the false witness type thing, but that's what we're looking at there. So The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer. That's important for us to know, that we realize that indeed the listening portion of a conversation is just as important as the telling portion. All right, then if we go over to Proverbs 20 and 25, Proverbs 20:25 says, "It is a snare to say rashly, 'It is holy,' and to reflect only after making vows." Now we have a story that will go along with this in a bit. excuse me.
Mine, the latter part of mine says, "And after vows to make inquiry."
Yeah. Okay, to reflect only after making vows, the English Standard, and to what?
And after vows to make inquiry.
After vows to make inquiry. So, there's, and I guess we'll get to this too, about being swift to hear and slow to speak. Here it says, when he mentions it is holy, what he's saying is that he's making a vow to God, but apparently he's doing it sort of presumptuously, not thinking it through, like we mentioned in the previous one in Proverbs 15. And you know, we've got to think things through. And I think these two point out that indeed that's something we do need to do. but we hear, you might say, rash sayings from people all the time, that when you look at them, it's just a rash vow to God that they have no intention of keeping, but it's just a phrase that they use all the time. And that's not right. All right. Then if we read in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verses 1 through 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, starting in verse 1, talks about fearing God. Starting in Ecclesiastes 5, 1, it's written, "Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know what they are doing, that they are doing evil. Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God, for God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few, for a dream comes with much business, and a fool's voice with many words. When you vow a vow to God, do not delay paying it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin, and do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity, but God is the one you must fear." And to verse 2, "Let your words be few." And at the beginning, don't let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. Lots of good advice here. And when it talks about guard your steps, right in verse 1, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Once again, we're talking about the fact that we're going before God. And when it says guard your steps, that's be aware of what you're doing. And be aware of what you're saying. You look like you have a comment. No? Okay. and so, I think in the latter half of verse 1, where it says, "To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they are doing evil." And there are many that would need to learn from that. In other words, that to to draw near to listen. That's the important part, is to listen. Yeah, Lynn.
When I read that the first time, all I could think about was Rehoboam. Because he listened, to them. And that's what I just thought about that.
Yeah, Rehoboam listened to the wrong people, that's for sure. Yep. So yeah, even if we're conscientious to listen, we need to make sure who we're listening to.
Because all those scriptures so far, that you read to going before God, meeting with God, he's first. And that's also something that Rehoboam did.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah. Yeah. Rehoboam didn't ask God's blessing for anything. All right. oh, here's the one that I mentioned, James 1, verses 19 and 20. That's the one you're going to bring up, weren't you, Latanya? Well, you had. You knew about it, though. James 1, 19 and 20. Know this, my beloved brothers. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness that God requires. And so that is a very, that goes along well with this verse that we're reading in Proverbs that says, he that gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him. we need to take to heart this which James has to say, quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. I tell myself frequently in Bible classes and things like that, that just because I think I have something to say doesn't mean that I need to say it. Oh, some of it may or may not be relevant. Others may be, well, we're going to end up going 10 minutes over or something like that. Who knows? But not that that's terribly important. But, yeah, a lot of times, many times what we say is just a repetition of what somebody else has already said. That's what you're going to say.
No. I do a lot of looking at teaching children. And one of the things recently that I was looking at was I can't remember now what the context was, but it was on basically being kind to other people. And she has a stoplight. And the red at the top means stop. So stop what you're doing, stop what you're thinking, stop what you're saying. The yellow was think about it first, and then the green was to do, then do what you were going to do or in context with that.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
So many times we go the other way. We do, and then they do what they do. Hopefully, stop.
Yeah.
But,
you know. And it's not the article I have in the bulletin this morning. I think I was reading another one that talked about the scripture that says it's hard to regain the friendship of a friend that you've insulted. So we need to make sure that we don't take this thing in James and turn it upside down and say, talk first, then think about it, you know. Shoot first, ask questions later type thing. Yeah. So you're looking at me again like you have something to say. All right? You should stop looking at me. All right. So that's, you know, the last one that we read about in the Old Testament about not rashly speaking a vow before God. Now we can get into the story of Jephthah. You knew that's where I was going. So in Judges chapter 11, verse 29 and following, anybody know the story of Jephthah up till this time? Jephthah was one of the judges of Israel, but not at the beginning of Judges chapter 11. So, Jephthah's dad was, I forgot which one, was a very famous person, Gideon? Gilead. Gilead was the father of Jephthah. And it turns out that Jephthah is the illegitimate son of Gilead. And then Gilead gets married, and well, it just says he was the son of a prostitute. It doesn't say he wasn't married at the time. I guess we can only hope. But it says Gilead's wife also bore him sons. And when his sons grew up, they drove Jephthah out and said to him, "You shall not have an inheritance, our father's house, for you are the son of another woman." So Jephthah was all sorts of mad about that, and he went off into Tob, whatever Tob is, and another land. And it says that he gathered people about him. However, we don't see that necessarily that that's discussed further, but he does. It does say that he gathered folks around him, sort of like getting a band, a small army or something together, or a band of hooligans for all I know. But anyway, he was off in this other land. And then the Ammonites threatened Israel. And they were all bent out of shape, they say, because you took our land when you came in, and it says here about 300 years ago. So it was a long time ago. And then, of course, later on, that's after this story right here, then the explanation is, no, we didn't do that. We asked if we could go through peaceably. And you said, nope. And you sent out armies against us. And so we went around you. And then God said, take them. And then they did. So he says, it wasn't us that decided to do that. God told us to go do it. But he was gonna cut you some slack to begin with, but you wouldn't be nice to us. And that, of course, is a, what would you call that? A rough?
Exact quote.
An exact quote. Okay. All right. Yes.
Or a paraphrase.
Or a paraphrase. It could be a paraphrase. Yeah. I'll go with the exact quote. But anyway, so when we get to Jephthah in this particular area, in verses 29 through 40, let me just read that. So he's come back into the land of Israel, and he's now sort of the judge, and he speaks to the Ammonites, and they don't listen to him. So starting in verse 29 of Judges chapter 11, it says, "Then the Spirit of the Lord was upon Jephthah, and he passed through Gilead and Manasseh, and passed on to Mizpah of Gilead, and from Mizpah of Gilead he passed on to the Ammonites." Now notice that all these things are on the east side of the Jordan River. So this is where Manasseh and the half-tribe of Manasseh and two of the other tribes stayed there on the east side of the Jordan.
Did Ephraim
stay on that side? No, Ephraim was, yeah, he was right north of Judah. Pardon?
Gad.
Manasseh. There were three tribes. Well, the half-tribe of Manasseh. So, anyway, we'll come up. Anyway. passed on to Mizpah Gilead, and he passed on to the Ammonites.
Reuben and Gad
were also, and Manasseh. Okay, Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. And then the other half-tribe of Manasseh had an allotment on the west side of Jordan. All right. So, passed through Gilead and Gilead, he passed on to the Ammonites. And here's our verse. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will give the Ammonites into my hand, then whatever comes out from the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the Ammonites shall be the Lord's, and I will offer it up for burnt offering. Maybe he was thinking about his wife. But anyway. I will offer it up for burnt offering. So Jephthah crossed over to the Ammonites to fight against them, and the Lord gave them into his hand. And he struck them from Aroer, to the neighborhood of Minnith, 20 cities, and as far as Abel-Karamim, with a great blow. So the Ammonites were subdued before the people of Israel. Then Jephthah came to his home at Mizpah, and behold, his daughter came out to meet him with tambourines and with dances. She was his only child. Besides her, he had neither son nor daughter. And as soon as he saw her, he tore his clothes and said, alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low, and you have become the cause of great troubles to me, for I have opened my mouth to the Lord, and I cannot take back my vow. I find it curious that he's implying that this is all his daughter's fault, at least in the words that are given here. I can't take back my vow, verse 35. And she said to him, my father, you have opened your mouth to the Lord. Do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth, now that the Lord has avenged you on your enemies, on the Ammonites. So she said to her father, let this thing be done for me. Leave me alone 2 months, that I may go up and down on the mountains and weep for my virginity, I and my companions. So he said, go. Then he sent her away for 2 months, and she departed, she and her companions, and wept for her virginity on the mountains. And at the end of 2 months, she returned to her father, who did with her according to his vow that he had made. She had never known a man, and it became a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel went year by year to lament the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite 4 days in the year. So, talk about a rash vow. So, rather than say something that he had control over, he says, whatever comes out the door of my house, I'll give that to you for a sacrifice. So, he must have been living with a lot of livestock in his house. So, that's what he expected to come out, or maybe their pet dog or something like that, or a cat, particularly a cat. So, but anyway, he made this rash vow, and it was terrible, the vow that he made. And he apparently was faithful enough to not ask God if he could take his vow back. And then his daughter was also faithful enough that she did the same. It's hard to understand. But go ahead.
No, when I first read this, God doesn't condone human sacrifice, though.
He doesn't. Yeah. However, no, it wasn't a problem at all. How about Abraham? Abraham and little Isaac. Well, I don't know how little he was, but Isaac. So.
That's God told him it wasn't something
he. Well, of course, by the time this occurred, the law had been amongst them, as it were, for quite a while. And they knew all these things. And they knew that they were permitted to make vows, and that they were to keep the vows should they make them. And we had admonitions already that when a person makes a vow, he needs to keep it. And so that's what was done. We don't see anything here that Jephthah or his daughter said anything to God about, well, can we retract this a little bit? So it shows us the seriousness of making a vow to God. And I would guess we could make vows to God today and probably do from time to time. I'm not sure. I mean, we can look through the New Testament, and I'm not sure that we can see that a vow like Jephthah made is proper. It's, God, if you will do this for me, then I'll do that. That's not the New Testament way. We don't give God an ultimatum. We either do it or don't. So, was it James that had the... No, that wasn't it. About the vow. One of the other verses that we read talked about keeping vows. But, I mean, we can go back into... Into the earlier New Testament, like Exodus or Leviticus, and find a lot of discussion about vows and such like as that. But the one that we read in Proverbs 20:25 is a snare to say rashly it is holy, and to reflect only after making vows. So that's kind of what Jephthah did here. He rashly spoke a vow, and then the law required him to keep a vow that he made, and so he did. And so Jephthah was then a a judge of Israel for 6 years, it says down in verse 7 of chapter 12. All right. So this kind of goes along with, he that gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame unto him, from Proverbs 18, verse 13. This goes along well with that, because Jephthah is speaking before he knows what to speak. So obviously we're not in an argument with anybody here and speaking out of turn or anything like that. But we could say that Jephthah did speak out of turn, that he had no right to make a vow like that, that it wasn't proper for him to do that. So then if we go on to the next thing I've got is 1 Samuel 15. Of course, we all know what 1 Samuel 15 is. It's the discussion between Saul and Samuel about the command of the Lord to go and do away, completely destroy the Amalekites. And so in 1 Samuel the 15th chapter in verses 10 through 26, but you know, just to get a little history of the thing. I mean, if we look at verses 1 through 9, then verse 9. Yeah, verse 9 itself in 1 Samuel 15:9 says, "But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, and of the oxen, and of the fatted calves, and the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them. All that was despised and worthless, they devoted to destruction." But
verse three,
that's the one. Okay, yeah. So in 15:3, it says, God says, "Now go and strike Amalek, and devote to destruction all that they have. Do not spare them, but kill both man and woman, child and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey." But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and the oxen. Not sure that those go together. So in verse 3 and then verse 9, we see quite a difference between what was commanded and what was done. Interestingly enough, when we get down here and look at the verses between 10 and 26, Let's just read that. And so in Isaiah chapter 15, starting in verse 10, it's written, "The word of the Lord came to Samuel, 'I regret that I have made Saul king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments.'" Interestingly enough, Samuel then knew that Saul had committed a transgression even before Saul showed up, because God told him so. And Samuel was angry, and he cried to the Lord all night. And Samuel rose to meet Saul in the morning, and it was told Samuel, "Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set up a monument for himself and turned and passed on and went down to Gilgal." And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, "Blessed be you to the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord." Now, how does that match up with verse 3?
I'm just surprised lightning didn't strike.
You know, this is a Nadab and Abihu moment right here. But I guess he's the king of Israel, right? So
he set up an altar, a monument himself.
Yeah, he built a monument for himself. That's great. Yeah. So "I have performed the commandment of the Lord," he says in verse 13. And Samuel said, "What then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen that I hear?" Saul said, "They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God, and the rest we have devoted to destruction." So Saul says the people brought all the good stuff back, and that which was devoted to destruction, we did. So he included himself in the destruction of the bad stuff, but not in the taking of the good stuff. Though, interestingly enough, when we look further back up in chapter 15, we see indeed that it was Saul and the people that took the good stuff. No. the sacrifice and the rest we have devoted to destruction. In verse 16, "Then Samuel said to Saul, 'Stop. I will tell you what the Lord said to me this night.' And he said to him, 'Speak.' And Samuel said, Though you are little in your own eyes, are you not the head of the tribes of Israel? The Lord anointed you king over Israel. And the Lord sent you on a mission and said, 'Go, devote to destruction the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed.' Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you pounce on the spoil and do what was evil in the sight of the Lord?" And Saul said to Samuel, "I have obeyed the voice of the Lord. I have gone on the mission on which the Lord sent me. I have brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and have devoted the Amalekites to destruction." Wait a minute. His tongue seems to be a little tied there. "I've done what you said. I brought the king of Agag. I go, wait a minute. That's not what God said. Oh, devoted the Amalekites to destruction. But the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the best of the things devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. And Samuel said," and we're all familiar with this, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to listen than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of divination, and presumption is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." Saul said to Samuel, "I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord in your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Now, therefore, please pardon me, pardon my sin, and return with me that I may bow before the Lord." And Samuel said to Saul, "I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you from being king over Israel." What if Saul had just listened to the recording of what he had just said? And go, wait a minute. You said, "I have obeyed the Lord's command. Look, here's Agag." No, that's not what God said. And then twice now, at least, he said, "The people took the good things." And then he says, and we, all of us, destroyed the bad things.
Okay, And when he was talking to Samuel, Saul kept saying, "Your God, not our God."
Yeah. It's, and I'm not sure, I look at that and I say, and, you know, I emphasize your God. I'm not sure that that's worth emphasis necessarily, because we see it numerous times throughout both the Old and the New Testament where God is referred to as your God or my God, as opposed to our God. And it may have something to do with just the Semitic form of speaking. I don't know. But it does, he does say that at least twice here. "I've done this for your God." Well, he's your God too.
But. Well, and like he was throwing things off on the people, not just throwing things off on Samuel.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm
not
going to take any responsibility for anything.
No, that's right. Yep. And it kind of all went downhill from there. Yeah. So when we look at the quote-unquote career of Saul after that, it didn't go well. No. All right. What else were we going to talk about there? Samuel and... This is the one that Latanya brought up. Let's go to John, the 7th chapter, verses 45 to 52. John 7, 45. So, Jesus was preaching in the temple, and the Pharisees and the priests had sent officers to take him. So in verse 45 of John, the 7th chapter, it's written, "The officers then came to the chief priests and Pharisees, who said to them, 'Why did you not bring him?' The officers answered, 'No one ever spoke like this man.' The Pharisees answered them, 'Have you also been deceived? Have any of the authorities or the Pharisees believed in him? But this crowd that does not know him, that does not know the law, is accursed.' Nicodemus, who had gone to him before and who was one of them, said to them, 'Does our law judge a man without first giving him a hearing and learning what he does?' They replied, 'Are you from Galilee too? Search and see that no prophet arises from Galilee.'" When we look at this, Nicodemus, an influential man in the Sanhedrin, and one who Jesus knew, says, "Does our law judge a man without first giving him a hearing and learning what he does?" And then God says, "He that giveth answer before he heareth, it is folly and shame to him," in Proverbs chapter 18. So that's what these people were doing. They're condemning Jesus for the things that he said, even before they give him the required hearing. And then later on, when they do give him the hearing, it's just a kangaroo court with no real substance to it. All right, and then on the related to this John, the 7th chapter, and we can look at Deuteronomy, the 19th chapter, in verses 15 through 21. Deuteronomy 19, starting in verse 15 through the end of the chapter. And this is where we get this idea. When Nicodemus says, "Does our law judge a man without first giving him a hearing and learning what he does?" In Deuteronomy, starting in verse 15 of chapter 19, it's written, "A single witness shall not suffice against a person for any crime or for any wrong in connection with any offense that he has committed. Only on the evidence of two witnesses or three witnesses shall a charge be established. If a malicious witness arises to accuse a person of wrongdoing, then both parties to the dispute shall appear before the Lord, before the priests and the judges who are in office in those days. The judges shall inquire diligently, and if the witness is a false witness and has accused his brother falsely, then you shall do to him as he had meant to do to his brother. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and the rest shall hear and fear and shall never again commit any such evil among you. Your eye shall not pity. It shall be life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. All right. So that's essentially the law of witnesses that Jesus was implying here when he was speaking in John the, whatever chapter it was, seven? John the seventh chapter, yeah. So, well, that's what Nicodemus was saying. Does our law judge a man without first giving him hearing? So we have his discussion about that. And we see that these people are themselves acting presumptuously. They're doing things that they ought not, and they're doing them without hearing him first. I think that most of these people that he was talking to, that Nicodemus was talking to, only heard about Jesus. They never really heard him, I think. All right. You got anything that I didn't have, Linda?
Well, one of the things that we were talking about earlier triggered a scripture in Matthew chapter 5.
Matthew 5.
Starting in verse 33.
Verse
33. Through
37. Through 37. You want me to read that?
Yes, please.
So, and the English Standard Version heads this paragraph as oaths. That's a difficult word to say. Oaths. O-A-T-H-S. Not oaths. Okay. Jesus saying, again, you have heard that it was said, and I know that it's Jesus speaking because in the English Standard Version that I have, it's in red. So, again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say simply let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. And that's an interesting thing to look at, is that it's not necessary nor permitted, we might say, by this, to swear by God. Or to swear by... Oh, okay. Or to swear by anything else. It says, in the American Standard Version, I think, it says, let your yea be yea and your nay, nay. That's all we need. We are the people that speak the truth. And that's what we need to be known as. Yes or no.
Isn't that why they changed the thing?
In court,
didn't you swear and affirm or affirm?
Yeah. I've been called on a couple of times in court to make that, and I said, I can't say that. You know, well, when you swear by God, you know.
Yes.
And so the old ones, and they said, what? And you go, well, it's not right. It's unscriptural. And so they have to come up with something else. Oh, yeah. Okay, so let's continue on then and go to question 25 next week. What is harder to be won than a strong city? So that's Proverbs 18:19. All right, that's where we'll go.